Ladies and gentlemen, oh God, I do this every time I start one of these podcasts. I fumble and stutter like an idiot. Oh, I love it. I think that's just going to have to be my signature for starting. I'm your stumbling fool, PJ Drummond. And I'm joined this week by a legendary man in the world of Chikara Pro Wrestling, that being a former director of fun, now primary commentator, Mr. Leonard F. Chikarson. Leonard, how are you doing tonight?
Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on.
You have a catchphrase now?
I stole that catchphrase. It's okay. From Adam Carolla's show. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm a big podcasting fan. I'm a big wrestling fan, and obviously a big Chikara fan.
Obviously.
So I thank you for inviting me to breakfast this morning.
No problem. Do you have a favorite breakfast item? We have many selections here in the restaurant.
Well, just the other day, and this was a shock to me. Mm-hmm. So did you know that there are multiple different flavors of Cheerios out there, not just your standard regular and Honey Nut Cheerios and so forth?
I had no idea.
All right. So they've expanded their line. And for the longest time, they had like Frosted Cheerios and chocolate Cheerios. And I'm like, I don't want to eat like candy cereal. You know, I'm like, I'm practically an adult at this point. And then the one day I saw that they introduced a new flavor, which is peanut butter Cheerios. Hmm. And my favorite combination, the greatest combination in the world, is chocolate and peanut butter together. And I'm like, I like Cheerios. I like chocolate and peanut butter. So I went and bought the boxes of the chocolate and the peanut butter Cheerios. And I bought a Tupperware container so I can mix them together.
Ah.
And I had stopped by my folks' house the other day, and I noticed the same container that I used to mix my chocolate and peanut butter Cheerios is the same container that my father uses to mix my dog's food. Like the exact same container. And I'm just like, oh, I'm so sad. I'm an adult and I'm mixing my cereal like a little kid. But yes, I bring my own. I know this restaurant usually doesn't allow outside jams or jellies or things of that nature.
Of course.
But I always do carry like a 4-ounce Tupperware container of my mix of chocolate peanut butter Cheerios.
As I learned from Sarah Del Rey, it's very important to have emergency food with you at all times. So I completely understand that. Now, I'm surprised you didn't maybe even attempt something even stranger by just picking up the peanut butter Cheerios and pouring chocolate milk over it.
Now, see, that's what my brother suggested, but I think that's too far. And even it was suggested to me, it's like, okay, well, he's found the chocolate peanut butter Cheerio combination. Get rid of all the other cereals that we have. No, I can't. I have to space it out, because if I have chocolate peanut butter Cheerios every day, it's not going to be special anymore. It's just going to be my daily routine. If I save it for like a Friday, you know, it's like, okay, the beginning of the weekend, it's my chocolate peanut butter Cheerios. You know, I'm like, again, you would think that I'm not a 35-year-old man. I'm a little kid, but these are the things that I enjoy.
I understand. Now, have you found a good balance with the, because you can't overpower one over the other, or is it pretty much equal amounts that you're mixing?
Before I got the Tupperware container, I tried to do the mix on my own, and it just didn't work. I'm not a mixologist. I had to rely on the Tupperware container, and all I do is I just pour both boxes in there. I give it a good shake, and I haven't failed with it yet. It's been successful since.
All right. I ask only because I had a friend in college. He had basically checked out in his senior year. He was there strictly to play Hamlet in our production that semester. And he did two things the rest of the semester. He taught himself how to play the Simpsons theme on the ocarina from the Legend of Zelda game.
And That's awesome.
Yeah, and he did many experiments trying to combine lemonade and iced tea into the proper tea cooler combination.
Now, and again, I don't know how old you are, what year that was. Mm-hmm. I myself tried to do the same exact thing for many a year.
Really?
Yes. And then Snapple, of all people, were the first ones that, at least that I came across, that had the lemonade iced tea combination already made.
Mm-hmm.
So my life was set. I'm like, oh, I've saved myself hours off my life. I could just buy this already mixed Snapple iced tea lemonade. And it had like some sort of weird name. It was like Pam's Mix or some nonsense like that. But it was delightful. This guy could have saved so much time if he had just discovered this.
See, I believe we had, this was college in, I went to college in central Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Yes. So there was a local brand labeled strictly tea cooler that was a, we believed was a mix of this. I wasn't sure if it had made it up to your neck of the Pennsylvania woods.
No.
Pennsylvania, I've always found very interesting because originally I did go to college in Pennsylvania, but I am from Bermuda. And there's only two places in the world that I've ever seen a treat soda, and that's in Bermuda and the Lehigh Valley.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
In Bermuda, of all places.
Yeah, exactly. That's our generic soda brand is a treat down there. And then when I saw it in the Lehigh Valley, I was startled that it actually existed elsewhere.
See, up our neck of the woods, and I think they've worked these into episodes of The Office. It's a Crystal Cola, and they have like Cherokee Red and like all these other like 50-50 is their Sprite knockoff. Cherokee Red is like this weird red. I don't even know what flavor it's supposed to be. Like, I stay away from all those like weird flavored sodas.
Okay,
it's diet and root beer for me, and like root beer is getting a little bit like questionable. There was one time I accidentally grabbed the cream soda instead of the regular root beer, and it was not a good day.
Oof. Yeah, I've never developed a taste for cream soda and root beer, honestly. Not so good.
Oh my goodness.
Not so good. I've stuck strictly with with the colas, the Pepsi and the Coke. Coke back home in Bermuda because they would make it with cane sugar. So it was awesome.
That's advertised up here as like they call it the Mexican Coca-Cola.
Mexi-Coke, yes.
Yes. And they sell like giant cases of it at the local grocery store.
Yes.
But you know, I try to cut a lot of sugar out, and because I've mostly moved to diet sodas, whenever I taste the regular soda, even with the Mexican, you know, with the pure cane sugar, it's just way too sweet for me, and it's just like, "Oh my God, I can't even take it."
See, I feel like you're trading one vile addiction for another. You're going from the sugar to the aspartame, and I think the aspartame somehow is much worse.
It tastes so much better to me, and I think it would be much more work to regain the taste for the sugar than it would be to keep going with what I'm doing. But at least, yeah, like I'm down to like one soda a week, so it's not even that much to begin with. I drink a lot of coffee, though.
Okay. Are you just a plain coffee kind of gentleman, or are you fancy?
No, I am not fancy. If my fancy, like I'll get like the extra shot in it.
Okay.
Other than that, it's just like I don't even have the barista or whomever they are put anything in it because I don't trust them.
Okay.
Because their idea of a little skim and my idea of a little skim is different, and. Mm. I like to use like the Stevie and Truvie and that sort of stuff.
Okay.
You know, I feel it's a little bit better. Sure. So I have a stash of that with me wherever I go in my man purse, along with the Cheerios and all sorts of other things.
Okay. Awesome. Well, you're a man well prepared.
I try to be. I try to be. And I wasn't even a Boy Scout.
Yeah, neither was I. I don't even know if we had them back home. Yeah, I'm not sure. We just kind of had the ocean around, so we kind of dealt with that. As you've learned, no doubt, hopefully by listening to maybe some of my other shows, I am terrible at segues, so I simply tend to bounce from topic to topic here. I have been curious. You, as I mentioned in my intro, you are a former director of fun for Chicago.
Former, yes.
How did the application process for that go?
You know, I knew this question was going to come up.
Of course.
And this one is one that I've answered before.
Mm.
And it's been a long time since I've had to answer it because I'm not the director of fun and haven't been for a long time.
Yes.
But I was on the board of directors for Chikara back in the early days, 02, 03, 04.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was around end of 04, beginning of 2005, where Chikara expanded. At the time, 2004, they were doing shows from February to November. They'd do one show a month. And then in 2005, if you remember, things exploded where they went from, they still went February to November, but they were doing triple shots of shows every month. It was Reading, it was Emmaus, it was Pittston. I missed the Pittston building. Hmm. So they needed to have somebody be on site. And there was a commissioner back in those days, but he came and went. I think he was crooked even.
Ah, yes.
But I tried to call it straight down the middle, Daddy, just like Bill Alfonso.
Of course, Midas the Whistle.
Yes, and they came upon me, the board of directors, and they said, hey, you know, your last name kind of sounds like this Chikara Pro. Why don't you go be our eyes and ears at these shows live and in person, and then report back to us with what's going on? And they said, we got to give you some sort of title. And it was one of those things where they're like, how about Director of Fun? And everyone's like, no, we got to think of something else. Mm-hmm. 24 hours later, everyone's like, yeah, Director of Fun it is.
Fantastic. And you had quite a storied career as the Director of Fun.
Yes. Not unlike previous people in charge of wrestling promotions like Bullet Bob Armstrong or whomever else might have been in charge of Smoky Mountain Wrestling or Ohio Valley Wrestling or much other smaller promotions in the area. Yes, a very storied career.
Yes. Now, did you look to Bullet Bob for guidance in handing out your particular brand of Chikara-related justice?
At least in his fashion sense. Awesome. He would wear like a short sleeve shirt with a tie that was ill-fitting, a baseball hat, and with his hair all matted out.
Oh, my God.
If it wasn't for my on-camera appearances in Chikara, I would look homeless. There was, and again, this is, when Chikara expanded even more from no longer doing shows up until, like, there was that time where it was like November to February, there was no shows. And for me, I hated there not being shows because I missed being at the shows and seeing wrestling and seeing a lot of the guys on the shows. But the thing that I liked the most about it was that I didn't need to get a haircut or shave for like 4 months. And it was awesome because by nature, I'm a dirtbag. I don't like to look clean. You know, if you look at my closet, there's like three suits and the rest is all like t-shirts and jeans. Uh-huh. It's very easy. You know, it's like, what was Jeff Goldblum's character's name in The Fly? Seth Brundle.
Yes.
Where he just had the same exact outfit every single day, so he didn't need to think about it. Mm-hmm. And that's how mine is. My closet is mostly like 95% black t-shirts and jeans. Don't need to think about it. Just grab the next one and go. Don't need to think about it.
Now, is this black t-shirts and black jeans or black t-shirts and blue jeans?
Black t-shirt and blue jeans.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. I don't have the I don't have the Daryl Hammond look.
Okay.
Where he specifically wears all black all the time. I don't know if his, oh my God, we're completely off subject, but
that's
his
fine.
His book is unbelievable.
I've been hearing this. Yes.
Oh my goodness. It is so good. I've been listening to a lot of like different comedians who've had books come out over the last couple of years, him being one of them. And man, is it dark. But anyway, so black t-shirt, blue jeans, and then when it's Chikara time, I put a shirt on that has buttons. And then when I was Director of Fun, I actually had to get like a haircut, shave, and look like a presentable human. And it was so it pained me. You know the episode of The Simpsons where they're doing their class photo and Bart has lice?
Yes.
Because they got that monkey that was in the basket.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Nelson is all dressed up fancy and Krabappel says, oh, Nelson, you look adorable. And he says, I feel like punching myself. That's how I feel when I wear a suit. I feel like punching myself.
So you seem to be describing yourself very much as a maybe, it might be too strong of a word, but an anti-establishment type of gentleman, yet you are firmly entrenched for at least a while in the establishment of Chikara.
I enjoyed that only because of, you know, the wrestling aspect of it. And sure. I liked, you know, the matchmaking thing and dealing with a lot of the wrestlers, of course. But to say anti-establishment means like I take a stance one way or another.
Sure.
And I don't like to do that. I don't like to be one of those people. It's like, oh, I side on this thing and I side on this thing. It's more like my thought process on most things is like, hey, man, whatever.
Uh-huh. You like to travel that middle of the road.
Yeah, I'm easy going, man. The path of least resistance, that's going to get me through the day without having any problems. I don't want to upset the apple cart, if you will. Mm-hmm. And again, you say my illustrious career. There wasn't a lot of problems that I had until like I started dealing with people like Vin Gerard or, you know, Eddie Kingston when he was having some issues with Hollow Wicked. I had to deal with Eddie Kingston on a daily basis. Just a few months ago when we were in Easton, Eddie had an issue with Wink, and a contingent of fans were chanting that they wanted me back as Director of Fun. And this was while Eddie Kingston had Wink Vavasour throttled around the neck in the ring. And I'm like, that's not what I want a part of. I'm very happy staying right back here at the commentation station.
Sure.
I don't need to be getting involved with these guys anymore. You know, it's a different thing now. Everybody's a little bit up their game and a little bit more agitated, a little bit more on edge with you know, the grand championship. That's what everybody's gunning for. And mm-hmm. I like Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston's a good guy. Me and Eddie Kingston, you know, talk when it's not about wrestling stuff. When it comes to wrestling stuff, when it comes to dealing with Chikara, he always comes up to me. He's like, Chikarson, you got to fix this problem. And I'm not going to do an impersonation of Eddie Kingston because I don't want him to kill me.
Please do. Now, I'm going to insist on it at this point.
And he would come up to me and he would say,
is that all right? Does that work? You have to do one.
That was PJ. And he would come up to me and say, we got to do something about this. And I'm like, I'm not in charge anymore. And then he would just push me out of the way. And I can only imagine if I was in charge, what he would do. So I'm okay not being in charge.
So, I mean, but you were ousted rather unceremoniously, before your legacy had really been cemented. I mean, and you didn't want to jump back in and bring yourself back to prominence?
When the opportunity arose and the voting came up, I don't want to say that I wasn't looking forward to maybe seeing my name come back up as the new director of FUN, mm-hmm. but it's not my decision anymore. When Dieter von Steigerwalt got the heave-ho, and he should have gotten the heave-ho much sooner, but when the board of directors decided to choose Wink Vavasour as the new director of FUN, I'm okay with it. The voting, I'm sure, is going to come up again. My name might be on the ballot again. Like I said, path of least resistance. Mm-hmm. Keep my head down. Don't upset the apple cart. And maybe when they do that voting again, they'll look at some of the decisions that Wink has made over the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then look at Chikarison and say, he hasn't really bothered anybody. Hasn't made anyone mad. Maybe we'll give him another run at the director of FUN. But until that day comes, I'm not gonna actively campaign for the position.
Okay.
But if it's offered to me, I will gladly take it.
All right. Until then, an ostrich with your head in the sand.
Yes. Yeah. That's the way I like it.
All right. I mean, just appearing on a board of directors is not something that, especially for a unique entity like Chikara, is not something that someone just kind of stumbles into. There's a history and a desire there. What was wrestling for you as a kid?
Wrestling was everything to me as a kid. Again, I had mentioned before, I'm an old man. I'm 35 years old. Mm-hmm. I've been a wrestling fan for almost as long as I can remember. And my memory is pretty bad, but when it comes to wrestling stuff, all of it's stuck in there. I remember sitting on my grandfather's couch with him, watching, you know, the war to settle the score with Roddy Piper and Hulk Hogan on MTV. It was one of the first times we got cable. You know, I remember going to the Catholic Youth Center in Scranton. It's one of those places. If you ever see any of those, like, shoot interviews with a lot of the old WWF guys?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, the Catholic Youth Center was a dump. We hated going there. That was always, like, the low shows. And I'm like, oh, I love those shows. But then when I think back on them, the very first time I ever went to the show, the advertised main event. This was the advertised main event. And then I'm going to tell you the actual main event we got.
Okay.
Advertised main event was Nikolai Volkoff versus Corporal Kirshner.
Wow.
What we got instead was Nikolai Volkoff versus Pedro Morales.
So this was
like 1985, 86 maybe. And this was a time where my mother would be taking me, my brothers, my cousins. It would be like a carload of little kids to the CYC every month. And WWF came there almost every month, maybe every 2 months. Mm-hmm. And from that show up until they did their last show during the Attitude Era in 97, I was at every single Catholic Youth Center WWF show. And then as our cable expanded in around the late 89, 90, I very vividly remember the very first thing I ever saw of WCW, NWA, whatever you call it, is when the Road Warriors unscrewed one of the spikes off of their shoulder pads.
Ah, yes.
And were trying to stab Dusty Rhodes with it.
Yes.
That was the very first thing I saw of WCW, NWA. And I'm like, this is completely different than the WWF stuff. And I was blown away. And
I had a similar experience. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no, go ahead, man.
No, I had a similar experience in the... I mean, back home, I didn't have cable. All I had was what the tapes that they had at the video store. So I'd seen a lot of WWF, and then they had a double tape set hosted by Magnum TA of the Best of Starrcade.
Yeah, that's a good tape.
And one of the first matches on there that I saw was, of course, Magnum TA versus Tully Blanchard in the I Quit match. Very similar thing. This was completely different than anything I had ever possibly seen. No one had been stabbed in the eye before.
Right. Yes, before. And then you look back at the history and it's like, oh, NWA used to do this every couple of years.
Yeah.
Somebody would try to stab somebody. It was just the way of the world. And then, like 90s, WWF upped the ante when like Jake the Snake Roberts snake bitten Macho Man Randy Savage like on the arm.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know you said you didn't have cable, but this was around that time. It was maybe like 88. And this is 1988, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm an old man. A lot of the people listening to this probably weren't even born or, were too young to even remember. This is when superstar Billy Graham was making a comeback, right?
Ah, yes.
And they did this whole deal where they showed his operation on WWF TV, like Superstars or Challenge or whatever it is. And like when I say they showed his operation, they showed like actual medical footage of them like giving him a replacement hip.
I remember this, yes.
And this is like 10 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. and I'm like in between watching cartoons, I'm watching this. And like you think back on it. But and I mean, you wonder why I even still love wrestling as much as I do today.
I mean life was so different back then. I mean even the cartoons that we watched at the time and I'm not much younger than you are. I'm 33. I just turned 33. And the cartoons that we had, I mean, were very different. You had Transformers, you had G.I. Joe, two of the most formative things I remember from my youth were the Transformers movie when Optimus Prime died, and then in the G.I. Joe movie when Duke gets like a spear through his heart. We experienced things a lot differently in cartoons and everything as kids. I mean, in some ways, wrestling at the time was more wholesome than anything we were seeing in cartoons.
Right, and WWF would sneak that stuff in there every now and then, but when it comes to wrestling, as I mentioned, the NWA stuff was like the next step. Mm-hmm. And then in 1993, when I discovered ECW, it was a completely different world.
Sure.
This was when they were on Sports Channel Philadelphia at like 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And where I lived at the time, it only came in like one room in my house. Like we got such a bad reception for whatever reason. It only worked on this one TV. So every day I would get home from school. I would, at the time, mm-hmm. I would do my homework and then go run upstairs, get my VCR. Cause I had a VCR. That's what I asked for Christmas. Cause I used to tape tons and tons of wrestling. Mm-hmm. I would get my VCR, bring it up to the one room that the TV worked in, that Sports Channel Philadelphia would come in on channel 20, mm-hmm. without cutting out, without having weird static or sound problems, and just sit there with my brother and tape and watch ECW every Tuesday at 6 o'clock. And then, and then when ECW happened, it was like a different world. Like I never thought of ECW as anything other than just like another WWF or WCW. Mm-hmm. I never realized that it was like as small as it was.
Sure.
To me, it was just like them. It was just more gritty and more like hardcore, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Were you really into hardcore wrestling?
Well, what do you consider hardcore wrestling?
Well, I mean, there's the definitions that everybody bandies around. There's, hardcore is going out and doing it every week and doing it as hard as you can, I mean, one of the things when I expanded my own wrestling fandom, I mean, the first things I bought were the IWA King of the Death matches from Japan.
Yes, and with Terry Funk and Cactus Jack. Yes,
exactly.
Of course.
And a tape of ECW's bloodiest matches. So I'm watching, like the Rottens tear each other apart and all sorts of things like that. I mean, it's hardcore wrestling, I think, it's not necessarily wailing on each other, but with, just various things that you find around. But there is a gritty realism to it. I mean, Memphis, I think, is sort of the high point of much of hardcore wrestling. In 92, seeing like the feud between Jerry Lawler and Jeff Jarrett and the Moondogs. I mean,
yes, that's a perfect example.
Yeah, because that's just as hardcore as anything else.
Right. And at the time, ECW, you're seeing all this crazy stuff that you'd never saw before. Like you said, the Rottens. And, mm-hmm. I was at these, I went to a lot of the matches back then.
Yep.
And, people would, they would just be brawling through the crowd and people would just be getting like blood just sprayed all over them from these dudes just killing each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back on it and like that stuff doesn't hold the same, you know, feeling to me.
Sure.
As seeing like a Stevie Richards versus Sabu match.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, one of those sort of matches, like the Malenko Guerrero stuff, or
yep.
things of that nature, where the hardcore brawls with the gangsters versus the Eliminators, I don't remember as fondly, but it was those classic matches that everyone thinks back and like Taz versus Bam Bam Bigelow, stuff like
oh,
that. Like
yeah.
the whole Taz Sabu run from 96 up to the pay-per-view. And
mm-hmm.
that's the stuff that I really remember fondly from those ECW days. And like Raven. Oh, Raven was my favorite.
Okay.
And a lot of his stuff was the hardcore, you know, the hardcore brawls with him and Dreamer and
sure.
like him and Terry Gordy, him and Sandman. But when it came right down to it, like those matches, you know, I still remember those matches almost like from beginning to end to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything that happened from the moment they came through the curtain to the moment they went back through the curtain when the match was over. I can still picture those matches in my head happening, you know, minute by minute, moment by moment, because they stuck with me. Whereas a lot of those other matches, like, yeah, I remember they hit each other with garbage cans. Yeah, I remember they hit each other with something. And then it all just kind of blends together because it's just a lot of the same garbage, if you will.
Right. Well, I mean, I think for wrestling in general, it's the events that happen that are like matches are infinitely memorable, but it's the events that stick out as well. Like the twists and turns that happen along the way. I mean,
sure.
Even to relate it to Chikara as well, that first moment when the Brudershaft came together,
ugh.
Watching that, and you knew that things were different and that something major had occurred, and you had no clue what was going to happen from this point out, but there was going to be a battle and a war.
Yeah, you know, again, that was the beginning of a bad year for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I was there in the thick of things. Claudio decked me.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, nobody's there. Like, you know, obviously, I'm not a wrestler. I'm not trained like these guys are. These guys put themselves through a lot of work and a lot of punishment to get into the ring, mm-hmm. whether it be Chikara or whoever it is. Claudio decks me. I hit the floor. You know, I bruise my hip.
Mm-hmm.
I have arthritis. Again, I've had arthritis since I was 18 years old. I'm an old man.
Wow.
I'm not in the best shape. I'm not in wrestling shape. And mm-hmm. I get decked. I get my bell rung. I go backstage to find out. I have no idea what anything else happened afterwards. I find out that I'm out of a job. I get the DVD. And I find out that all this other stuff happened afterwards. And it was just, it just blew my mind. And yeah, that's one of those things that I'll never forget. And it wasn't even about the match, because the match that the Colony and the Assyrian Portal had beforehand was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those moments, like you said, you know, there's moments that happen in wrestling. Like, I remember the exact day. I remember where I was. A lot of my life happened around wrestling growing up, since the time I was 7 years old to now.
Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, I mean, it's been, I think, you know, anyone listening to this podcast can agree that wrestling is a defining culture moment of their life. I mean, and so many of us wouldn't necessarily be involved in this business if it wasn't. And if it hadn't given so much to us that we wanted to give back to it just as much.
Right. This is one of the few things that you do, you know, be involved in wrestling because you love it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a super secret scientist job that I do on the side, and it's not like I love it, but I do it.
Sure.
And there's a lot of other people that have other jobs, and, you know, it's because they couldn't do this or they couldn't do that, so they settle for that. But if you are involved in wrestling, you do it because you love it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and everybody's, like you just mentioned, you know, the punishment everybody that steps in that ring goes through just to even get to that point, let alone what happens to them once the bell rings, is beyond imagination. And I mean, to see individuals that are able to do it for so many years, I mean, the recent Joshi Mania shows and seeing a presence like Aja Kong, and knowing that she had been doing it that long and that she still could, and that just what a danger she was when she was out there, was amazing to me. I was scared of her, without a doubt.
I'm with you. Again, yeah. Whether it be Aja or, you know, and I'll be honest with you, I'm pretty much afraid of everybody, because everybody who comes through the Chikara locker room can give me a whipping, and sure. I'm not going to put up much of a fight, believe me. Not that I could.
All right. I mean, have you ever been in a fight in your life? I never have. So I'm just curious if you have.
Well, I had three brothers, so we used to fight all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember we would get, you know, as younger kids, we would get the pay-per-views for both WWF and WCW at the time up until, you know, 92, 93, whatever it was. And after those pay-per-views, we'd all be all so amped up, we would just pound the snot out of each other.
But you never went so far as to take it to the backyard?
No. I never did that. I knew I was not a physically gifted person by any stretch of the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with backyard wrestling as long as, you know, you're safe. You know, it's no different than tossing the pigskin around with your friends if you want to play football or playing baseball. You're not trained. You know, you can get hurt doing that. Believe me. My brothers played football and baseball, and up until recent years, just my general clumsiness and poor coordination, I never broke or hurt anything. But all my brothers who played sports, you know, football, baseball, basketball, everything, they had broken arms, broken legs, broken toes, everything. And, you know, as long as, you know, you got a head on your shoulders, you're not going to get yourself hurt doing really much anything.
True. So were you a different member of your family in the sense that you mentioned your brothers all doing sports and stuff like that? So were you more the intellectual of the group?
I don't want to say that. I don't want to say that, like, I'm...
Not to put them down. That's not my intention.
No. But of the four of us, obviously, we were at different levels in school. I have a twin brother as well.
Ah, okay.
Yes. But of the four of us, if we're just comparing the four of us, I had the highest GPA of the four of us.
Okay.
For those same grades.
Gotcha.
But other than that, you know, I read a lot. I followed sports, but I knew I could never play it. Not from a lack of trying. Like, I did, you know, everybody does T-ball and, you know, I don't know if it's like they'll call it like Pee Wee League or minor league or whatever it is.
Right.
But I would always give it like that first year and I just wasn't good at it. And it's not like I quit or like I did the first practice and I quit or whatever. I like baseball, I like football, I like basketball. I wanted to play them, but I just didn't have the physical acumen to do them.
I feel for you there. I tried out for the JV basketball team after the first round of tryout / practice. My teacher actually pulled me aside and said, "I'm just letting you know there's no way you're going to make this."
You know what? And again, I so rarely bring it up. I did play tennis at a high school level.
Okay.
But it was only the only reason I made the team was because so few people tried out for the team.
Mm.
And they needed to have a mandatory amount of people. I think they needed to have 6 people on the team. And they only had 6 people try out, me being one of them. So that was the only reason I made it onto the team.
Okay.
I wasn't any good at it, but I did enjoy playing tennis for a very long period of time. But yeah, I kind of fell out of most sports around the time of the baseball strike. In 1994, if you remember that.
I do. You took personal offense?
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
I just kind of, it was like right at the end of the season, I remember it was real close to the World Series. And if I remember, they didn't have a World Series that year. And I thought to myself, I'm like, the guys who are making like all these crazy contracts are arguing with each other and they can't agree with the owners. And it just felt like too corporate to me and too corporate controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I've watched a full, you know, baseball game, football game, basketball game since 1994. And, you know, that just means more time to watch wrestling.
Absolutely. Or to possibly do your other pastime, which if people aren't aware, you actually host another podcast about a topic near and dear, I think, to many in the Chikara locker room's hearts, comic books.
Yes. Just as much as I'm a wrestling fan, I am just that much, if not more, of a comic book fan. The only reason that I have more wrestling knowledge from my younger days is because I wasn't the one paying the cable bill, and a lot of times the wrestling would just be on your regular TV stations, whereas comic books you actually had to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my folks weren't going to buy me every comic book I wanted. They weren't going to spoil me. And more or less, as I got jobs, as I got older, my money went to, you know, at one time getting a car and getting insurance on that car.
Sure.
So I can get myself to wrestling shows, which cost money, and get myself to the comic book shop to get comic books.
Right.
So it was once I got an actual job where I was able to buy more comic books and become entrenched in it and then go back further. And, you know, I like to think that my knowledge of comic books is just as much as or as deep as my knowledge of wrestling. And if everybody has, you know, everybody has blind spots in both.
Sure.
And nobody is an expert on everything. But yes, as you had mentioned, PJ, I do host a comic book related podcast here on the Grizzly Network called Weekly Long Box. New episodes go up every Wednesday. My buddy Todd and I do it, and Todd is just one of my closest friends, the guy that every Wednesday when I go to the comic book shop, we talk for a while. Most people who come in, they get their comic books, they pay, they leave. I'm usually there for an hour, hour and a half, just talking about everything that's been going on, and random topics come up, and that's essentially what the show is.
All right.
It's not a lot of rambling. You know, we do try to make things as concise. We try to give you as much news as we can.
Sure.
And our thoughts on things. And we try to get our listeners involved in what we do. But yes, comic books and wrestling. Well, you have the wrestling side of things. I'll keep the comic book side of things.
Perfect. Perfect. Now, I myself am a recent delver into the comic book world. I've always been fascinated with comics. My whole issue was more probably I have this horrendous completist streak in me, and which is next to impossible to do with comics. I can't really go back and read the entire run of X-Men and catch up to where things are now.
You actually can almost.
I'm sure I could if I endeavored in some nefarious means with the internet.
No, sir.
Oh.
Marvel is really good at this, and they a couple of years ago, they released several different DVD ROMs where it's like $50, and you get every issue of Uncanny X-Men.
Hmm.
And, you know, I think they did it for X-Men, they did it for Avengers, and they did it for Amazing Spider-Man. They might have did it for Fantastic Four as well.
Okay.
But each DVD ROM or DVD ROM set has 500 issues.
Wow.
And, you know, you get them digitally. Obviously, they're going to be on the disc, so they're not as easily portable if you have one of these fancy internet, these tablet devices.
Mm-hmm.
But me, I like to have the physical books in hand, so a lot of the stuff that's the older stuff, you know, as you mentioned, perfect example is like X-Men. I have all the oversized hardcovers of the previous X-Men runs.
Ah, okay.
So you can get anything, more or less, anything you want. A lot of that older stuff is always in print. And I know you're saying nefarious means, but even digitally, mm-hmm. both the big companies, your Marvel and DC, have a lot of that stuff available through their digital stores for your tablet devices or your computer, whatever it is. And you can get stuff as cheap as like 99 cents an issue.
It's been good to see they've adopted the digital age, but it definitely sounds like you're more of a purist.
Well, I don't want to say purist because I think, you know, when my son is the age where he's actually going to be reading and wanting to read comic books instead of me forcing him to listen to me read him comic books, it's going to be more prevalent of a digital medium. Is the print medium going to go away in my lifetime? I don't think so, because I got a lot of comic books. I got a lot of physical comic books.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're going to get to a point at some point where the digital and the print are going to be as equal. They're going to be equals. They're not going to, like, not one's going to take over the other. I think they're going to be equals for a while.
Okay.
Because you're going to have so many people that just don't want to make that leap to digital.
Well, sure, I think it'll be a lot like vinyl. You know, it's going to maybe not quite as niche as vinyl is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, you know, we've gone through so many changes in the music industry, and there are people that still, they swear by the sound quality and the clarity of a vinyl record.
Right. And vinyl went away for a while and then vinyl came back. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you look at, you know, sales for music, a majority of it is through an iTunes or something of that ilk. And very few CDs do actually get sold. And when CDs do get, and it's just the natural attrition of things as we're going to more of a digital electronic society.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that is going away. And, you know, fitting a cheap plug even for ourselves here at Chikar, where we just recently put a lot of our stuff available digitally to download just at the same time as the DVDs are available. And I know me,
brilliant.
when it comes to movies or TV shows, I don't have tons and tons of DVDs. I've got an entire bookshelf full of movies and TV shows on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes right down to it, it's so much easier for me to turn on my Xbox and watch something digitally through there.
Absolutely.
You know, something I bought off the iTunes store or an MP4 of a show that I got from SmartMark Video, it's easier for me to have it there mm-hmm. and to back it up instead of having the physical DVD. Now, why my mind doesn't go to the comic book is because they haven't perfected the tablet device to my liking yet.
Okay.
For comic books. I like to have that physical book in my hand. I like to turn the page. And there's just something about the way certain books are printed mm-hmm. that I can't even imagine how they would look or how they would try to convey it to you in a digital format.
Sure, sure. Yeah, a double page splash page of some massive event or something like that would be hard to convey.
Not even that. A perfect example. And I talked about this on my podcast a couple of weeks ago. I want to hear what you're trying to read, being a completist. But
okay.
DC just recently did their relaunch of their entire universe back in September, and everything got all new number ones and started from scratch. Right. Some things more so started from scratch than others. Batman and Green Lantern were more or less left alone from the tracks that they were currently on. But there was an issue of Batman from about a month or so ago mm-hmm. where, you know, Batman was trapped in this maze and he was going crazy. And to convey that to the reader, you had to turn the book. Like, you would turn the page, but you would have to turn the book sideways to read the page. Then you would turn the page again, and you had to have the book upside down to read the page, to kind of, like, simulate Batman's spiral into madness, right?
Okay.
So if you're reading that on a tablet device, and you don't know that little gimmick is in the book, mm-hmm. you're going to try to turn your tablet device to read that issue, mm-hmm. and the tablet is going to try to correct itself.
That's
which
true.
It's trying to correct itself to the wrong way. So now you have to go, and somebody told me this, you have to go out, you have to turn off whatever the preferences to auto-rotate your tablet device. Mm-hmm. That's too much work. It really is.
And it's
then
true.
There's other books, and you say double page spreads, but there's books like Batwoman as an example, which is one of those stunningly beautiful books to look at. Mm-hmm. And they have it set up where almost every part of the story is a double page spread. The panels don't work the same way that normal comic book panels do. Mm-hmm. You'll have a double panel that goes across the whole top, and then across the bottom there'll be like three other panels that are interspersed into the top image. And they even have it to the point where that's the only book that DC puts out mm-hmm. where the ads aren't interspersed throughout the book, because it would break up the art. They just put all the ads at the very back of the book. And I can't even imagine you getting the full feel of what that art looks like if you're reading it on a tablet device. Like, that's one of those books, like, I get it in single issues, mm-hmm. but when that comes out, like, the oversized hardcover, where it's just, like, these, like, beautiful colors, and it's, like, almost, like, one and a half times the size lengthwise of a comic book, and mm-hmm. it's nice paper and everything else, you get one of those books like that, and, like, the art just looks so beautiful and mm-hmm. stuff like that, and I couldn't imagine how it looks on the tablet device. So that's one of those reasons why I can't go to the tablet device yet. They're going to perfect it. They just haven't done it yet.
Sure, sure. And I've actually seen a few. I've recently started reading an example, I think, of what you're talking about. I had procured a collection of the series Nightly News by Greg Rucka. And there's definitely a style in the artwork where, like you said, it's more spread over the couple of pages. And yeah, it is difficult to try and fit that properly on a tablet to get the proper flow of the story and follow things the way that you're actually supposed to be reading them, as opposed to having the defined panels like in a traditional comic book. So you're quite right that they haven't perfected what they're doing just yet. They're definitely getting there. I think for me, what I've found so far is just the ability to carry quite so much is amazing to me.
Oh yeah, on a tablet device, believe me, you can store thousands and thousands of books on there. And you know, there's this thing that they have now called the cloud or something, where you can just like mm-hmm. grab things off your home computer, move them onto your tablet device, and you know, I don't know how it works. I think it's something with computers, but. Once that gets perfected mm-hmm. and, you know, once all that's all squared away, I think that's going to be it's going to bring more people into comics who have never read comics before. And sure. that's what they need to do. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, there's people, I think DC just released a study, and I think they had something like 93% of their readers were male, a very low percentage. I think almost like 45% were getting them digitally, which is, you know, crazy. But that was people were getting them digitally and in print. Mm-hmm. But the new 52 that they did back in September brought in 5% new readers. And it was 5% of their survey. I think it was like 7,000 to 8,000 people. And of those 7,000 to 8,000 people, 5% were people who had never touched a comic book before. Hmm. And it said that they would stick around to get more comic books. And, you know, to have that sort of growth, especially in today's economy,
sure,
those are people that wanted to try something different and probably wouldn't have tried it if it wasn't an event like DC did and if it wasn't available digitally.
True. Very true. Very true. Now, you mentioned actually something in the course of that conversation that I think is very interesting in terms of Chikara. You mentioned now that with the, you know, offering the digital downloads, and I do believe you guys have a new iPhone app that is also available.
Yes, the Color Tunes app.
Yes,
for the iPad.
Yeah. Oh, for the iPad. Okay, gotcha. Chikara has always seemed to make it a point to be very forward thinking in its use of technology. Has that generally just been the thing that they've wanted to do, or has it just been recognized that this is another way to get attention for the product?
Well, you know, obviously this is a Chikara podcast.
Sure.
We're both Chikara employees, and I've been in a lot of those meetings, and a lot of times when things like this come up, Chikara is willing to give those things a roll of the dice. Now, there was a time where a lot of different promotions were going on to iPay-per-view, mm-hmm. You know, the internet streaming and everything else like that. And, you know, I've never gotten one of them. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I've been at those shows myself, and people will tell you that a lot of times it might not have been the best quality.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you from not only doing commentary for all of High Noon, but also from watching the Twitter stream of everyone else who was, you know, watching the show along, there was very little, if no, problems. And there are times where, yes, Chikara is very forward-thinking, but a lot of times with this new technology, you need to sit and wait for that technology to be perfected. Because if the new technology exists and it's not perfected and you hop onto it, you could leave a bad taste in the consumer's mouth.
Certainly.
And I think if I remember correctly, and again, I don't have it here in front of me, I'm not going to pretend to rustle papers, but in the Wrestling Observer 2011 year-end awards, High Noon was one of those top-rated shows.
Mm-hmm.
And a majority of those other top-rated shows were either WWE or UFC and Chikara. You know, and, you know, people will tell you, WWE and UFC are national conglomerations.
Yep.
Million and billion dollar corporations. And their shows that they put on, they put on, I think, 15 shows a year, these big shows, not only their weekly shows that they have, but these big shows, these big events that they have on a yearly basis. They have 15 a year. Chikara has a lot of shows, but their one big show that Chikara had this year was right alongside of those in the voting of the people who really, really know their wrestling.
Yeah.
So I think that says something. And if Chikara got on this internet pay-per-view stuff a year ago, 2 years ago, at this point, I don't think there would have been as many eyes on High Noon as there was this past November.
I mean, it's very true. Yeah, you have to know the limitations and of not only as my mind goes blank, not only the technology that you're using, but even, you know, what you as a company are capable of. And I think that's where Chikara has also been very smart. I know they had we had experimented with stuff before. There was the pod per view.
Yes.
That was a tried out and everything like that. And I mean, you know, obviously the things like the podcast, A Go-Go, and now the amazing barbershop, have, I think, really made Chikara stand out for people, without a doubt.
Right, and that's the thing, they're not afraid. Chikara's not afraid to try something new. And sometimes everything doesn't work. Everything's not a home run. But to use a baseball analogy, you know, you can't hit a home run without taking a couple swings. If I remember correctly from my stats, I think your leading home run hitters back in the day, your Babe Ruth, your Lou Gehrig, stuff like that, they were also right around the top strikeout records as well.
Ah.
Because you got to go and you got to make that attempt.
Sure.
But when you hit and you get that home run, it means so much more.
Very true. Very true. And on that note, it's going out on a big note for Chikara. I think we might be about time to wrap up this this delightful discussion, and it has been quite delightful. Leonard, thank you so much.
PJ, thanks for having me on, man.
No problem.
It was a lot
no
of fun
problem.
Here this morning.
Let's
for breakfast.
Throw let's throw make sure we get all the proper plugs out. Is the best way to describe it. As you said, you have your own podcast here on the Grizzly Network, the Weekly Long Box.
Weekly Long Box. Yes, every Wednesday, a new episode goes up. You can follow the show on Twitter at Weekly Long Box. There's tons of news weekly. And then, of course, you can interact with myself and my co-host Todd through that account. You can also follow me personally on Twitter at LF Chikarason. I'm going to have a talk off air with PJ to find out why he's not on Twitter.
maybe soon. This podcast might have to facilitate
yes,
something like that.
But
yes.
I recently just overcame a milestone. I got 500 followers on Twitter, which isn't that big of a deal to many people, but in the Twitter sphere, it actually means something.
Congratulations.
Mostly because I had a bet with your fellow referee, Derek Sabato, on who would get there first, and I beat him.
Brilliant. Well, I mean, everyone needs to beat Sabato in many different ways, but, you know, brotherhood of stripes and all, but Derek Sabato is a unique individual, to say the least.
Right. I do just actually want to close this out. So as we were having our battle to see who would get to 500 first, you know, You're not on Twitter, but those of you listening to the show are on Twitter. A lot of times you'll get in your Twitter feed people who follow you who are spam bots, or very clearly spam bots. And, you know, both Derek and I would be very conscientious to make sure that we deleted those people and reported them to the proper people. And as it was starting to get toward the end and he was starting to close in and I was hovering around like that 497 mark, and I'm like, oh, man, I think I might have to start bribing people to follow me just so I could beat them. You know, I could do it. I could do it. I can, like, give away, like, prizes or something. Maybe when I set my sights on a Jakob Hammermeyer or a Tim Donst, I'll break out the prize bucket. But as I was getting it, I woke up one morning and I saw that I had my 500th follower. And I'm like, oh, let me see who it is. Let me make sure it's not a spam bot. And it wasn't a spam bot. And if you're listening, I apologize if I offended you. But one of the things that happen on Twitter is you get people who do, like, fake accounts, right? Like, there's a fake Darth Vader, and, like, he says, like, oh, it's things in Darth Vader's voice that Darth Vader would never say. Or there would be, like, there's a Batman one, and there's a Hulk one, and there's a this one. Well, my 500th follower was the fake Kane. You know, Kane from World Wrestling Entertainment?
Of course, of course.
Right. So if I had given out a prize for my 500th follower, it would have been to fake Kane, and I would have been so ashamed that I would have had to contact fake Kane to get his real fake address so I can mail him his basket of prizes. So yes, once I set my eyes on your Tim Donsts and your Jakob Hammermeyers to beat their followers, I'll have to open up the prize patrol. But yes, PJ, you need to get on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at LF Chikarason.
If it will help you beat Tim Donst and Jakob Hammermeyer, I'm down. I'll get on Twitter.
Jakob, I'm close. I think I'm only about 30 away from him, but okay. Like Donst is almost at 1,000. I don't think I'm going to get there anytime soon, but it's not going to be from a lack of trying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And last but not least, I think we would be quite remiss to mention that, that very soon coming up, Chikara, continues its spread internationally as it heads into that great white north of Canada.
Yes. I've got my passport ready to go.
Brilliant.
And I'm even wearing a Chikara shirt in my passport photo, so they'll know what's up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they will be, I'm trying to rapidly pull up the information as we sit here. Here it is, March 24th at the Trio Sportplex in beautiful Vaughan, Ontario. And then the following day, Sunday, March 25th, they will be in Ottawa, Ontario. Go to chikarapro.com. You can get all your information. You could purchase your tickets. You could see what's coming up and know the joy that will soon be entering your lives when Chikara comes to Canada.
That's right. If you're one of those people that have always said, hey, how come Chikara doesn't come to Canada and you're not at these shows, we will know. We keep track of every person who's ever said, why doesn't Chikara come to Canada? And you must be at this show. It is being this. A podcast is a legal and binding contract. I'm saying, if you have said ever, at any time, on the internet or in the privacy of your own home, I wish Chikara came to Canada and you're not at this show, We're coming for you.
Well, we'll end this podcast with threats from Leonard F. Chikarasin. And once again, Leonard, thank you so much. You've been a joy and a pleasure, a scholar of wrestling. And
PJ, sorry to interrupt you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir. And Chikara fans, we'll talk to you again soon.